I talk to a lot of younger coaches that they catch a lot of flack. Oh, you're just a coach. When are you going to get a real job?
Right. Right.
You know, and giving them the backbone to say, this is my real job. And it is really important. And these are all the reasons why, and I'm 100% invested in, and this is my mission. This is my purpose. This is what I'm going to do.
I love that. I absolutely love the two pieces to that. One is that taking the time to actually iron that out and say, like, this is why I do it. This is what I believe in. This is who I am morally as a person. Cause like you said, I found that as well too. When I didn't have a clear vision of who I was, what I wanted, and what my goals and purpose were, it was hard to make hard decisions. It was hard to have hard conversations. But when you really iron out for yourself what you stand for and what you believe in and what's morally okay to you, it actually isn't that hard. Mm-hmm. It's difficult still, but it's simple. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of The Shift Show, where my number one goal is to bring you tools, ideas, and the latest science to help you change gymnasts' lives. My name is Dave Tilley. Today on the podcast, I'm very excited to be joined by Lindsay Stansel, who is a high-level coach in the Pennsylvania area and has been someone I actually have learned a lot from in the last 5 or so years when I've been putting more information out with Shift. She's been very professionally and very grateful to share some alternative points of view on some pretty controversial and complex topics that I think maybe we had different points of view on, and she had a different perspective as a coach versus me as a, you know, a mid-level coach and a medical provider or a researcher. And, you know, we've always had some conversations behind the scenes about, you know, how do we really approach training hours? How do we really approach, you know, not only changing things so that the coaches can kind of get, you know, more of an experience they're happy with, but also so that the kids and the parents are also happy, right? I think there's some important conversations around making sure we're removing some of the negative practices, and we are also being very hyper aware of the athlete's experience. But we also, as Lindsay points out, have to really be aware of, you know, great coaches out there who are doing an awesome job, but are really being asked to be 17 different roles, right? They're trying to be, you know, strength coaches and skill coaches, and they're trying to work on the emotional side. They're trying to manage, you know, recovery and nutrition conversations, stuff like that. I think a lot of that is wrapped up in some really good points that Lindsay has. So we talk about training hours and how we go about that. We talk about how to realistically, you know, train young athletes who have high level goals, who want to go to college, who want to go in the elite system. We talk about what goes into being, you know, a competitive high level coach that's training athletes at a high level. We also wrap up really well by talking just about some cultural ideas about how do you actually go about growth and change and working with a team and trying to get rid of some of these really hard issues like athletes that aren't motivated, right? Or some uphill battles against maybe some coaches who are not willing to change their ideas. How do we approach this as a sport? Because that's the reality of the hill we're looking up at as we move into the next few years. So I really appreciate Lindsay's experience. I really appreciate her input, and I appreciate her taking time to share her points of view with me, because she's definitely changed my mind on some things. And I think that I've also maybe changed her perspective from what I see on the medical, the strength coach, and the researcher side. So I really enjoyed this. I would appreciate if you guys please just share this with every coach that you know, because the more coaches and parents and athletes that hear these kind of conversations about, you know, how do you have professional discussions around different points of view? How do you think about complex situations more than just a straight linear, you know, one-sided argument? There's many, many things that go on in gymnastics, and we have to be willing to talk with each other and figure out the best, you know, ways to move forward. So I think this will be a really good way for people to hear, you know, some common discussions, but also some multiple viewpoints and kind of chatting about it. And hopefully it inspires people who are listening to have these conversations in their gym and have these conversations with parents or athletes about how do you move forward in the sport. So lots of amazing information from Lindsay, but also some really good ideas around having some of these discussions. So please toss it up on Twitter or Facebook or Instagram screenshot. Let us know what you like. Also, please rate and review the iTunes podcast or Spotify, wherever you're listening. We appreciate those feedback. We listen to those comments. We get future guests based on what people say in the comment section and stuff like that. So hope you guys enjoy this wonderful podcast with Lindsay. We're all set. Lindsay, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate your time, especially early in the morning.
I'm really excited to do it. I love the conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think off air, we had a really long, great conversation a few weeks ago about many things. And just to kind of frame the conversation for podcast people who are listening or watching, a couple of reasons I wanted to have you on is, for one, I really respect your coaching, and I respect a lot of the work that you're doing as an active coach in the trenches, so to speak. But I also really respect your willingness to share alternative points of view about some of the things that we talk about on the podcast and that we talk about like on our social media and stuff. So I think it's important that people welcome different perspectives, and I'm always learning and I'm trying to better understand. But, you know, as I think many people do, I look back to 5 to 8 years ago when we started a lot of this stuff, and I'm like, man, I can't believe I said some of the things, or I thought some of the things that I thought a long time ago. So I would love to talk about some of the more, I mean, I don't even think they're controversial. I just think it's complex, some of the topics that we've talked about. So that's why I would like to have you on, if you're okay to chat about some of those things.
I would love to. And I totally agree. I think that, you know, I hope that people don't think that I'm like against those topics. I just enjoy the conversation like you do. And I think when those things get put out, I think it's important to examine all of the different aspects. Cause like you said, they're really complex. And moving forward into a better world of coaching, it's just going to take a little bit of work. It's going to be more than just like, here's a great idea.
Yeah. And the other thing that's challenging too, and it's the one of the reasons why the podcast has become the main thing we like to do here with like Shift, because like, I love quotes. I love, they make you think, little snippets of the video to help people maybe get to the podcast. But as you and I know, a 20, you know, character tweet or a small quote does not give context around everything. And so what I hope happens to people with the media that Shift puts out is like, it makes you think a little bit enough to go back and listen to the podcast. And then I hope that people see in the podcast that we have very fluid discussions about like, it's not black and white. It's not, it's very gray. It's very complex. It's very nuanced. And it's not as easy as like, you know, make this policy or just have this conversation and all your problems go away.
Right. Totally.
And the other thing that I think is really important to mention too is, it's really, I think the hallmark of moving forward in the sport, like you said, is having these conversations where, you know, there's nothing ever disrespectful about, you know, the person. I never, anybody who critiques me or has ideas, I never think ill of them or bad of them. I just am genuinely curious about multiple people's perspectives. And I think a lot of people right now, I mean, you could make the argument for like, you know, politics in America, but definitely in gymnastics, is it feels like an us versus them mentality. It feels sometimes people are, it's like parents versus coaches or medical providers versus coaches or coaches versus coaches or fans of gymnastics on, you know, the gym internet versus certain people. And while there is an important role to play in holding people accountable and calling out some actions that are maybe not favorable to coaching or to medical providers or whatever, I think that it's important that a lot of the conversation goes towards, okay, what do we agree on? What do we disagree on? Why do you think that way? Oh, I never saw it that way. Oh, I didn't realize you thought that. Like, I think that good communication that has respect for the person, but maybe disagreement in ideas is really how meaningful change happens.
100%. And I love the way you framed that because that's exactly spot on. And I hope that people take that perspective.
Yeah. You would hope that they're able to have those conversations and realize it's not like an attacking of someone. It's just an idea or a concept you maybe need to update or change, you know?
It's not about who's right. It's about what's right.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the book that I'm not sure if I told you this, but I'm reading Adam Grant's new book called Rethink. And he talks a lot about these ideas, like the need to let go of your beliefs and constantly update your ideas and not attach your beliefs so hardcore to one thing. And I think that was the reason I finally reached out to you, because I was thinking, I was like, who are people that, you know, I think have a multiple different perspectives around a topic that I talk about. And then I messaged you. I was like, you want to do a podcast? I'd love to just chat about like some of these things that we're going to chat about today.
I was just so funny because I think I told you, I was like, were you talking to somebody? Because you like hit everything like in your little message to me. That maybe we don't perfectly see eye to eye on, but I actually think, you know, after our first conversation, I think that we're a lot more similar.
I would agree. I would totally agree. I think there's way more overlap than difference between it. And I think the reason, I think it's a really good example, I hope that people take away from the podcast, I think the reason that after our long discussion that we probably do have different opinions is we see different edges of the sport. And for me personally, I'm completely biased in what I see. I see a lot of kids that are hurt. I see kids that come from having negative experiences. And then I have my own gymnast, this little sub cohort of 25 girls that I work with. But it's almost unfair. You know what I mean? Because I have a medical degree. We have mental health counselors. We have so many things that I know other gyms do not have in terms of like the resources, the finances, the staff, and goals. Just the goals are different of some of the athletes that I work. And so you see a different side of the sport, which is you have been successful with high level athletes, and you see some of these more hardcore, you know, nuanced discussions around colleges or the elite system and stuff like that. So it yields a different perspective than I think either of us have.
Totally. And I think, you know, coming out of that, it's good for me too, because I have to reflect with the exact same thoughts. You know, my perspective comes from a small gym in Western Pennsylvania where, you know, we're all kind of nice to each other. Like, it's not super cutthroat over here. You know, Region 7 is generally a friendly place to be. and so I do think you're right. A lot of our experiences really frame the way that we look at things. And I would then probably take that across the country and say, okay, everyone's truly experiencing a very different version of gymnastics all over. So.
Yeah. And even within, as I've learned from talking to a lot of people on the podcast, is that even within one gym, different groups can have different experiences because they have different coaches. The same kids and one coach could have a different experience because maybe they don't jive well personality-wise. They have different parents. They have different backgrounds. Like, it's really, that's one of the most important things I've learned in the last few years as a lot of things have changed, is like everyone's experience is very unique and you have to respect. I can respect their experiences without living through them myself.
Right.
Or maybe, you know, not agreeing with some of the concepts those people believe in.
Right. Totally.
And just to kind of give more context, can you maybe share a small little background on like your coaching journey and what you've been through, kind of where you're at now? Because I think that will help with some of these points we talk about.
Yeah, sure. So I was not a very good gymnast. I was not allowed to start competitive gymnastics until age 12. And when we moved to Pennsylvania, I was so fortunate that a local gym, not the one that I own, but a local gym took a chance on me. Because even in the 90s, people weren't putting 12-year-olds on their team that had no experience. And so I learned a lot in a very short time. But I also learned enough to know that I wasn't going anywhere with gymnastics by the time I hit 16. You know, that the dream was dead, never existed. And I switched gyms to the gym that I own now, and I entered into what is now called the Excel program. And at the time, it was novice optional. Mm-hmm. And across the country, at that time, any state could name it what they wanted. So just to give people a little bit of a idea on that in the 90s. And the purpose of it was actually to push gymnastics forward. And that's not what this gym used it for. It was a recreational competitive program that I joined into. I was training about 9 hours a week when I graduated. I had a lot of fear, but I also learned that a lot of my problems stemmed from lack of technique, lack of experience. You know, I learned all of those things, and I went on to college, and I thought that I was going to go join the FBI, and sophomore year realized I just really wanted to coach gymnastics again, so I got back into coaching, and I had actually been coaching through my entire competitive career. I started coaching when I was 15. I would call that recreational coaching. I was not like a professional coach, obviously, but started coaching and graduated from college. I was head coaching a level 9-10 team in college down the street, and I felt very ill prepared to be doing that. And I came back to the gym that I own now, Excel Gymnastics, with the former owner. And he put me promptly right back into the development team program and said, you will build yourself from the bottom up. And that is what I did.
That's awesome. And so now you work, full time, right? Head coach with a variety of different levels. But I mean, also I want to make sure people know, like, and not to toot your horn, but like you had a lot of success at the collegiate level. I think that's, in my opinion, that's what a lot of kids in America are looking towards. And even the other internationals, is like, they want to have a good college experience. They love that dream of the team membership. And so you have many, many athletes who have successfully gone through the level 10 program and also gone to colleges. And you also have obviously some involvement in the elite system as well as a younger coach. I think that's important because, as I've notoriously said in the podcast, and I think we've talked about online, is like, I don't have that experience, right? I have fortunately had some athletes who have gone to college at a Division III level, gone to level 9, level 10, kind of skated around that, but it's never been a consistent level 10 elite status, Division II, Division I. So I think that changes a lot of the perspective on what it takes to really be successful at that level. And, I can talk to Nick and I talk to his experiences at the elite level, but I still think it's very different living in America in the type of society that we have versus maybe another country.
It really is very different. Just from the way that we're set up.
Yeah. Exactly.
In America, which, I mean, people can throw stones at it, but then you have to look like, geez, we bring gymnastics to so many kids.
Exactly.
And we bring competitive gymnastics in a different way that gives so many kids a different chance. Okay. So while our system isn't perfect, I still do love it. If you look at the whole, I'm like, geez, we're doing a lot right. The kinds of kids that we can give chances to. Mm. Is just so many more. And obviously, I love gymnastics and I really do. I think it's for everybody.
Yeah. Yep.
So I love that about what we do here in America.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think something you said very casually there that is so, so important that I want to say almost on every podcast and every day is that there are coaches who we know do not deserve the chance to work in gymnastics anymore because of the actions they've done. However, that is a minority. There is a very small percentage of coaches who are truly morally off the cliff and are doing it for themselves or ego or money. And I mean, I think it's important we talk about them and highlight them, but I would say 95% of coaches are really good people who mean well and are, and I would say they're either doing the right thing by what they think is right at the time.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They're not malicious. They just literally have not gotten the best education. Like you talked about, you were thrown into the wolf's den without an education.
Yes.
And the other, another large proportion of those people are actually really great people with sound morals, doing the right thing every day. And you just don't hear about them because negativity is so much louder on social media. So you don't hear about these coaches who are like yourself and like Sarah and like Nick and like so many of the people we've talked to that are just quietly doing great work, right? Because they're too busy doing great work and they don't want to just brag on social media. Like all my kids are doing well. And you know, we don't have that many complaints with our parents, you know? So I think it's important to remember, like for everyone listening, that for every case that you hear that does need to change and we need to take seriously, there's probably 25 amazing coaches out there.
And I mean, you know, I look at all my friend group, and then I look at my social group here in Western Pennsylvania, and these people are passionate and they love kids, you know, and they love gymnastics and they love bringing that. So I do think that's a huge point. That is kind of like the cornerstone of a lot of my thought process when I am responding.
Mm. Yeah.
Is like, well, what about the 99% of us?
Yes, exactly. And on that piece too, is that I think people need to remember, and I think Sarah's episode will come out down the road, but like even within the higher level rings of gymnastics of level 9, level 10, level elite college, is that there are a lot of people who are, while they are chasing high level skill success, they still ultimately know what we're really doing here. We're developing great humans who are going on to do successful things in life. Gymnastics is amazing. If they want to do gymnastics till they're 90, that's phenomenal. But the highly competitive sliver of their life will be short in comparison to the rest. So I think even the people I meet, like you and Nick and Sarah and other people, are like, they still know behind the scenes why they're doing this. You know what I mean? And I think that's a misconception or a faltered perception of gymnastics right now, is like, it's like recreation is fun and exciting. And the second you compete, it becomes cutthroat and hardcore and you're yelling at the kids and you're pushing them super hard. And it's like, I don't think that's reality, like far from it.
It's really far from it. Like, it's just not like that.
And unfortunately it becomes a stereotype of the masses, because you have a few monsters, right, that are really not great people. And unfortunately it gets lumped all together. So hopefully people, just by hearing this or the podcast or watching online, can realize that the majority of it is really, really great if you choose to look for it.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's easy to find.
Yes, exactly. It's right around your corner. You just walk into a local gym and see. So that being said, there are a couple, I think I was brainstorming a lot on our last conversation about the things I would really love to have a discussion on. And I think the first one, this was the first thing you really opened my eyes to, you and Nick and somebody else, it might've been Kale. I forget, somebody else I was interviewing. But essentially this idea of like the training hours, right? About like, this is a hard conversation. Let's talk about complex, starting with the most complex one, is there are many, many caveats and nuances to training hours. And from my perspective, again, I am biased. I see kids that are really banged up, that are hurt. They have a negative experience. And I just see kids that are just really like missing cumulatively like 2 to 3 years because of injuries. And I think part of the reason is because at like age of 8, they were really pushed into like almost 2-a-day trainings, and like 20 to 25 hours is like a level 7. And it's not lost on me that the research is clearly indicative that maybe those training hours are aggressive. And that's part of the thing we have to talk about. So, but then again, you had said multiple times on some social media, and we had talked privately about like, there's a lot that goes into the quality of those hours and not just the quantity of those hours. And then I thought more about like, okay, well, Nick has told me that he can train athletes 20 to 25 hours per week and get a lot done. And so has Amy Borman, without having such a negative consequence. And then I've seen some gyms that do 15 hours per week with higher level athletes, and they're miserable. They absolutely bury the kids in volume. And so I don't know. I don't really have a question. I would just love for you to expand on your thoughts or share what you think. And then maybe we'll go from there.
Yeah. So I remember the post because I did comment. And I think those things trigger me a little bit, because I always want to make sure that we're examining, like you said, both sides. Yep. And as soon as I saw that, I was like, oh, geez, if we start to make recommendations or even mandates too soon about hours without talking it through, that could really have some negative consequences on kids' dreams. And I would say that if you look at the common common thread between coaches is, you know, we want to make those kids' dreams come true. That's why I work so hard every single day for my athletes.
Right.
And of course, when they're little, they all want to go to the Olympics, and you know, that's not really reality. But as they get older, a lot of their dreams are realistic. And I think that's why I work so hard. And then you have to set up a training regimen that reflects that desire and that dream. Mm-hmm. And So in your day, in our day, I shouldn't say in your day, what we do, what's going into, you know, when we are training between 20 to 25 hours, we don't always do that. And I think that's important too. Like, you have to look at the athlete's moment in their life and then make the right choice. Right. And maybe that's only for these five kids.
Yep.
Maybe it's for two groups of kids. But you have to reflect their goals and their parents' goals at all times. And maybe that is that seventh grader, the level seven, due in 25 hours. I do always try to take myself or my thoughts out of the equation and say, what is it that you want? How can I make this happen? In a respectful way. But what's going into our training, you know, they're coming in and they get time for their own personal prehab, you know? So we have a in-house physical therapist, which we're really lucky to have because most people don't have that. Right. So you know, we're able to flag a lot of problem areas because the kids are not all built perfectly. Mm-hmm. You know, they're just not all the same. So they get, you know, between 5 to 10 minutes to do that. And then you have to do a nice quality dynamic warm up. Yeah. That takes another 10 minutes. So now we're 20 minutes into practice. Then you need to have your nice quality, well thought out conditioning plan that changes, you know, however it is that the gym deems to change that, but you're looking at 50 minutes to an hour of that, and boom, you're an hour and 40 minutes into practice.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
And you haven't even touched the equipment yet. So, I do think that when you start to really look at what should go into a quality practice to create a Division I scholarship athlete, because like you said, that's a lot of my kids' goals.
Yep.
How am I going to do that? That's really important. And then you get onto the events and you look at, you know, bars specifically. I think that's one of the events I'm just slightly better known for coaching. And I think the example I used with you were some of my better kids that are in college right now competing bars for their team. And the amount of time it took between ages 12 to 16 to really get that down when you're working multiple D's and E's. And these aren't even kids going elite anymore.
Right.
They are just wanted to get to a competitive college. And so that requires time. It required, them taking a turn and then watching it. Then reviewing it with me, discussing what technical parts we thought went wrong, trying again. And then maybe that day they get it. Maybe we realize that day their mistakes are emotional. They're just having a bad day. You know, either way, even if you only have six girls age 12 to 16 in a group, I mean, I spend most of my day talking. Well, really listening. I wouldn't even say I'm talking. I'm letting them talk. And so then to try to train on time, and that's how you get happy kids, by the way. You know, people come into my gym, they're like, wow, all of your kids are so happy and they're so respectful. I'm like, well, that's because we treat them first with respect.
Yeah, listen to them.
But what is respectful to a 13-year-old girl? Being heard. That's what they want. So when you look at all of those things, it's like, how do you do all of that? You're kind of looking at a more lengthy practice.
Right.
I look back when I was 13 and what I was doing when I wasn't in the gym, and I don't really know that I was missing out.
Yeah.
You know, like, I really enjoyed my time in the gym. I loved that time when I was training more hours, even though I wasn't very good. Like, I loved that. And I think that most of my kids love that too. You know, given the choice, they would rather be in the gym. That's where their friends are.
Sure.
That's where their friends are. So, that's kind of where I started with you of making sure that we don't take away opportunities by saying this is right and this is wrong, or this is the appropriate number of hours. There are some kids that can train high level hours, and there are some kids that are phenomenal that they just can't. Yeah. And unfortunately, you usually don't figure that out until you figure it out, which might be after two or three significant injuries. There's no magic eight ball. I'd love to put all my kids in an MRI machine and see every problem and say, okay, this is the right path for you, but that's not feasible. So I guess to me, as like an educator, giving children a chance and hearing their dream and hearing their parents' dream, and then trying to rectify those two things is my number one goal, and making sure I allow the time to do that. And that does require a large number of hours, usually around the ages of 12 to 15, to be getting multiple D's and E's.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think there are two things that you mentioned that I think resonated with me a lot when we first had this conversation. And it's honestly something you changed my mind on the last time we talked. It wasn't even before that. But like, I think the how you spend those 45 minutes to 60 minutes on an event is really important. And in my mind, I think the problem comes up when you have someone who is not maybe reflecting on the quality of the turns and what you're doing between those turns to critically solve problems technically. And what I see, what I made a mistake on as a younger coach, when I still see a lot across gyms everywhere, not even in America, is like it's a 45-minute rotation of skills and events, but it is moving at a blistering pace. And then like very minimal time to think about your corrections or do drills specific to those corrections. And it's literally like bar, drill, 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 conditioning, chalk up, bar. You know, they just run this like almost like it looks like a rat race, you know what I mean? Of like kids that are just moving to move. And the coach is just saying, go faster, 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 more and more and more. And I think that's where in my mind, I start to see some of these problems come up because it's not really like quality execution of critical thinking. It's just like exercising. It's just exercising, you know what I mean? And so that's one thing that I really think people should take to heart if they are going to have longer practices is one, the quality of the communication that you're having in video feedback or drills that are specific to the problems you see. But then also, like you said, is like you do a crazy amount of planning outside of practice to make sure it's efficient use of your time. Like here's the warm up that we're doing. Here's the prehab that we're doing. Here's the conditioning that we're doing. Here are the goals we have. Here are the skills we're going to work.
Yes.
I think a lot of coaches, that's lost on them, that they don't really do that. And they fly by the seat of their pants a little bit when they go through the athlete. So I think that those are things. And the other thing I think is a nuanced caveat here is when you mass apply one template to all the kids. Mm-hmm. That's impossible to do differentially with training hours because of money and time and practice times. Like I get that. But I think the problem is that you expect all the kids to do the exact same assignment all the time. And it's like, no, this is the assignment. Here's what it takes. Figure it out. And I think that approach to coaching is where I think we, maybe it's more the coaching style and the approach than the hours themselves on paper. I think that's what my mind's trying to tell me right now. So do you agree with that? Do you not agree with any of that?
No, I definitely do. I think it's funny because there's things that just make sense to me that when other people bring up is that's not what other people do. It doesn't, I'm like, really? Well, why wouldn't you? but I do think that also is why, you know, if I'm running my level, like we're gearing up for regionals, all of my level 10s are doing something different. Everyone had a different version of basic day yesterday. You know, today's Thursday, so 2 days ago. So Tuesday looked different for everybody and Wednesday looked different for everybody. And I do think that does take time. It takes experience. And I think that's hard too, you know, is there is no substitute for experience. And these hard conversations we're having are because I'm 25 years in. Mm. And then on top of it, I'm 25 years in with really great mentors. Really solid, great people showing me the way and giving me all sorts of opportunities and bringing me to opportunities that I didn't earn myself, that I just got to witness. So I think that's really hard too, because the ability to kind of, for me to step back and make those different assignments and to do that, to value that and to be able to do it quickly, it's really hard. And maybe coming up about 10 years ago, I was having to write down. I mean, if I go back to my old lesson plans, they're like 15 pages long because I like this page for this kid and this page. But I did. And I spent the time to do that. Not everyone's going to do that.
Right.
It's a lot of work.
That's a massive kudos to you in respect to you and other coaches who do that, because that shows that level of passion and commitment to really do the right thing. And it's easy. It's easier to just do mass application of here are all the drills, here are all the skills we're going to do. It's easier to just look on YouTube and find your conditioning circuit or just do drills, see online and not critically think about what the kids need. It's hard to make lesson plans. It's hard to learn about strength conditioning. It's hard to reflect on like, ooh, that didn't go well. And I think it might be actually my fault, not the kid's fault.
Right. Well, you know, I think what the advice I would give to coaches is to make sure that they have a strong mission statement and a vision statement for themselves. Because if you know what your purpose is, it's always easy to make the right decision. Always. And so then it's not work. You're doing what you're passionate about because you're living your vision and mission statement. Mm-hmm. So I do think that that's a really important aspect that makes it easier for some coaches and harder for others. Mm-hmm. And being okay with your purpose. Like, I am fully okay that my purpose is to help teach kids to get what they want. And like, that is what I live every day. That is my mission statement. It's not my business's mission statement, but my personal mission statement. Every day I come in the gym is my job is to help teach kids to be in a position so they can also get what they want at any given time in their life. And to be able to have the voice to say, this is what I want. This is what I need. This is how I'm going to go do it in a very systematic, planned out. So that's what I'm doing every day. It's easy to make the individual lesson plans to help them work through those things. And I think, you know, one of the jokes we have in the gym is I'm sure everyone thinks that our mission statement is to win. And it's just not. We do that. I like it. It's fun. But that's not why I go into the gym every day. That's not why I'm making those lesson plans, you know? And then it's up to the child. If the child wants to win, I will help them understand this is what you have to do.
Yeah.
If that's what you want, you know? So I think that it would, if coaches sat down and kind of examined their personal life, why am I doing this? What is my purpose? And then you just have to embrace it. This is not a glamorous job.
Yeah.
It's just not. It's never going to be. So you just have to accept this is what it is. Either I love it or I don't, and go 100% in.
Yeah.
This is. And I talk to a lot of younger coaches that they catch a lot of flack. Oh, you're just a coach. When are you going to get a real job?
Right.
You know, and giving them the backbone to say, this is my real job. And it is really important. And these are all the reasons why, and I'm 100% invested in, and this is my mission. This is my purpose. This is what I'm going to do.
I love that. I absolutely love the two pieces to that. One is that taking the time to actually iron that out and say, like, this is why I do it. This is what I believe in. This is who I am morally as a person. Cause like you said, I found that as well too. When I didn't have a clear vision of who I was, what I wanted, and what my goals and purpose were, it was hard to make hard decisions. It was hard to have hard conversations. But when you really iron out for yourself what you stand for and what you believe in and what's morally okay to you, it actually isn't that hard. It's difficult still, but it's simple. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, I should have this conversation and pull this kid from this meet because their ankle's sore, or talk to this parent and say she may be a little bit out of line. It's not easy, but it's clear what you need to do.
Right. And then you just move forward. And then it's not so much work. Because we talked about scope a little bit. I think we're going to get into that later.
Yep.
And I always bring up scope specifically for the coaches that don't know yet that this is their life. Because once you've decided this is your life, well, the scope is easy. So it's easy for me to work the work hours I work because it's what I want to do. I wake up and this is what I would like to be doing.
Yep.
And I don't necessarily need a clear delineation between my personal life and my work life because they're kind of the same thing. Mm-hmm. But that's not true for everybody.
Right.
And so that's why I bring up scope, because I think it's important to respect the people that either aren't there yet or are on their journey there, or they might find out that coaching isn't what they want to do.
Yep.
And I also want to respect the adults. Like, as much as we respect the children, we have to respect these young people trying to figure out what they want to do with their lives and extend that same grace.
Mm. So. Yeah, I agree. And I think I would definitely love to get into that conversation that you talked about. We've mentioned before of the ideas about making sure we're not undervaluing how much coaches do and stuff like that. There's one piece I still want to button up before on that is next to the training hours conversation. I think the way we get into a tough situation with what happens so early, because we do have some literature reflecting, like, if we're too aggressive or we do too much at a young age, from especially 8 to 12, I think, and 12 to 13, like the pre-puberty, puberty years, it snowballs quite a big risk factor down the road. And so the next layer I've learned from Nick and you and many other people is, I think, how you train high level DE skills at a young age is very, very important. And I also think when you compete those skills is very, very important. Mm-hmm. I think Nick was the first one to open my eyes to it, is that like you can train a Jaeger or a Ginger or a double bike or a full inner or your Chenko full on all of these drills, soft surfaces, easy impact when they're 10, when they're 11. If they want to go, you know, level 10 junior division one, you have to start training that stuff when you're young, when their brains can handle a lot more change. But I think the problem comes to, in my opinion, and I would love to hear your ideas here, well, I see the common fault, because when the coach gets excited or the parent gets excited or the gymnast gets excited and they see they could do a double pike or they could do a Yushchenko, they could compete a Jaeger, and they start doing them when they're like 11 or 12, competing them or doing them a lot in the gym. And then you're competing in Yushchenko full and you're in puberty for 6 years, you know? Right. What I mean? And I think that's where we need to have a more honest conversation, and maybe I have no idea how, but try to, I don't like the word hold people accountable for this, because coaches need to make their own decisions, but more just provide better guidance about the possible ramifications if you start doing 3D level skills when you're 12 years old and what that could possibly do for your body to senior year in college. So I think that's part of the conversation. I'd love to hear your thoughts on it.
I think that's a huge one. And it, for me, like I said, that's easy because of what I'm trying to do. So it's not hard for me to pace those kids. I think somebody said, you pace your kids really, I was talking to a college coach. He's like, you pace your kids really well. You know, like I have an athlete right now. She can double A, she can full in, and she can Yurchenko 1.5, and she's 15. And we haven't done any of those things on a hard surface. And she's 15 and we haven't done any of those things on a hard surface. Right. Still, not yet. So I think there's a couple things in there. It's prioritizing what's most important for their future, you know? So when like I know that this athlete wants to go to a high level Division I school, that is her goal. We let her play with the elite route. And then from there, it's very important to me that the athlete and the parent both come to me and say, this is what we want to do. And once they've said that, they have a full understanding of what that means.
Yes.
And once you actually talk about what that means,
yeah,
it's not as glamorous. But I would never take that away. If an athlete came to me and said they wanted to do that, I would absolutely go down that road again.
Right.
As long as there's clear understanding,
yeah,
you know, but I looked at her path and it's like, okay, what's, you know, what is the going to be the least impactful on her body and still put her in a position to be doing that, even though she's not elite. And trying to make those decisions. I mean, we didn't put her single bar release until this year because that's a lot of impact on the shoulders.
Right.
You know, that's a lot. But we do a lot of shoulder prehab and rehab and all sorts of things. So you just kind of look at that. The shoulders are not taking as much though when you're doing three leg events. I mean, beam turned into a leg event. That's what it turned into. It was a skill event and it still kind of is, but now it's also kind of a leg event.
Yes.
So, you know, making those decisions of I can't be upgrading all the leg events all at the same time. So it makes most sense to be really focusing on bars and upgrading there and just kind of working that progression through with every single kid.
Yeah.
Because you're right. Like if you're looking at a normal aggressive athlete, you know, what do they really need to be able to do to achieve what they want? And then just making sure that you're setting up your lesson plan around what they want.
Right. Right.
You know, and I think then you can make, and then you make the easy decisions.
Yeah, exactly.
Then it's not so hard. And I also think feeling very comfortable with yourself, so you don't feel pressured to be in that rat race like you talked about.
Huge.
I think that that's a lot of it. And I think that people will pressure you from outside. I've definitely been pressured, you know, and it's eventually feeling like, I don't really care what you think about me.
Yeah, it's the most important, right?
It's right. I don't actually care. Yeah. And then it's hearing from, making sure you're reaching out to the right people and finding those right people. I think the best advice I ever got with the AA was from Craig Zappa at ENA. Mm. You know, I reached out to him when I first started training those skills. And for the exact reason, I'm like, geez, you have a lot of older kids competing AA. I never see them compete it when they're little. Why? Mm. And, you know, he went through exactly why, for very similar to what you're saying.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, they can't withstand it. I spot every single one. I wait to put it out. because, you know, what's the benefit of having a 12-year-old that can double A on the floor if they can't double A on the floor when they're 15? There's no value.
Right.
There's no value.
Yeah.
So I think reaching out to the people that you know are going to have a really good perspective and then taking that and making that part of who you are helps you do that.
I really love that. Yeah, I have follow-up questions. One, you took the words out of my mouth, which is you have to, back to your personal mission statement, your personal vision for yourself, is like, until you figure out your own personal moral compass and stuff like that, you don't have the stomach to stand up to the criticism of people saying like, why aren't you competing this? Why aren't you pushing her? You're holding her back. I really fell victim to that as a younger coach and also as a younger medical provider, is I didn't have my morals really clearly articulated. And I caved under the pressure of some like national team people asking me to do certain things. And I made the wrong call in the moment because I was insecure about that. But also as a coach, you know, I was doing some things that fell in line. So that's the first piece of advice I would say you gave really well. But two is the follow-up questions are on a technical side, then a more cultural side. The first is, how do you give people advice to train those hard skills? So say they have a young 8, 9, 10-year-old, you know, hot rocket. She's incredibly talented. She wants to be in the gym. She wants to work hard, and she's turning double pikes and she's turning this. How do you teach the kid to pace? And then technically, how do you find you can develop those skills safely without being on hard? Like, is it trampoline? Is it drills? Is it spotting? Like, what are you doing? Because I think coaches are really want to know your ideas here.
It's all of those things. And then, you know, you have to throw them the candy. We say that a lot in the gym. Like, everybody works for a paycheck.
Yeah.
You know, everybody likes candy. So you have that little one that's doing all of those things. And maybe you do want to put it on the floor once or twice. Spotted.
Yeah.
With mats. Yeah. You know, you do let them put it out in a meet once or twice when you know that kid is feeling phenomenal and you know that there's no chance of injury, you know? And then you pull back like, okay, now we're going to do this. Yep. And as long as you're usually, if you communicate that with the parents up front, like, here's the plan and here is why, you can push through that and you can keep that little one who loves the big skills and who knows they can do them still interested and happy. Because usually that little one that's interested and happy also does enjoy winning.
Yeah.
And that's an okay thing. I think we're starting to like go a little too far away from that. Like, I don't think it's wrong to want to win.
Yep.
Or want to work so hard that you're the best at it.
Yep.
I think that's a perfectly fine thing as long as it's done correctly. I want to always make sure we never get too far away from that. I told the girls the other day, there was something going around the internet, and I was like, you know, girls, when you go to the doctors, do you want that doctor to not have wanted to be the top of their class? Or are you going to want that doctor to be okay as a C student?
Yeah.
They're like, no. So I always want to make sure that, you know, I want to foster. If there's people that want to be excellent, I want to foster that.
Mm.
There's nothing wrong with that. So that's kind of how we do it. Like, I look back at some of the little kids that came up with big skills. And that's how we did it.
Mm.
You know, it's a lot of soft surfaces, like you said, a lot of trampoline, a lot of drills, you know, being hand spotted. You know, they all learned Jaegers and they all learned Tkachevs and they were all 10.
Yep.
But being hand spotted and safely, you know, either placed on the bar or with like nice mats, put a fluff under them.
Yep. You
don't need to fall to their face 8 times on an 8-incher just because that's what we did in the 90s.
Yeah.
It's not necessary. We have so many lovely mats now.
Yeah.
Put them under the bar. Let them do it twice on the floor.
Yep.
You know, and then you pull back. And then you set their level appropriate for that. So that way it's actually easy to make sure that it's an easier conversation. Like, oh, we can't do that in this level right now. Like, I have a 11-year-old level 8 who can double back and double pike and do a laid out Yurchenko. But she's a level 8. And it's not cheating that I'm not making her level 9. Because she shouldn't be competing those things. So it's very easy to say, we're going to train this, but when she competes, she's going to do a front through to full. Because that's appropriate.
Yeah. That combination of having the education and the equipment and the resources available to tramp, you know, tumble track, soft surfaces, sliding mats in, like, so you can train these. I completely know, recognize and understand the value of teaching young kids all of these skills when they're younger, because it's challenging to learn them when they're older, bodies change. Like, you want to have that foundation. Like, I totally get it. But I think along with what you're saying is having the plan in place to educate the kid early about, hey, you're going to, like, you're 10, we're going to hand spot you through a Tkachev, but like, mm-hmm. we might not compete this for 3 years. Like, you right. literally might not be strong right. enough to handle 5, 10, 15, 20 of these a week when you have to compete it. And you start that educational process early for them right. and the parent as well, because that's my next follow-up question is, I think it's easier when you build trust like you have with the gymnast to kind of educate them to, like, hey, this is the plan. We're going to pace slow. In my opinion, in my experience, it is 90% the parent or somebody on the external who is the one who is like, why can't we compete this double back? Why can't we compete this full? Colleges are looking like, we got to do this. Like, and I don't know, most parents, well-intentioned, want what's best for their kid. They want their potential to be reached. They know the college is the goal. Some parents, not so much. They're maybe doing it for the wrong reasons about what their Facebook feed looks like or who they can talk about at their dinner party to mom and grandma. But how are you dealing with that, holding back on those things for young kids to the parents? Because I think that's a bigger conversation that coaches tell me is like, yo, I get it. But these parents are relentless sometimes about wanting to push. Why aren't you doing it like Susie is? This gym is doing this. This gym is, you know, competing these skills. So what are your tips of advice there maybe for parents on that side?
That's funny you brought that up, because I've been having a lot of conversations with other people about this. Mm. So when I look at when coaches snap and maybe their worst attributes get pulled out instead of their best attributes, it's usually under pressure. Mm. It's when the pressure is too great and the criticism is too high from all angles. And so I think one of the reasons that I felt called to kind of comment on your problem. Do you hear my puppies in the background?
I love it.
That I kind of felt called to comment on your pressure parents
yep.
post
yep.
was, and this is something I think that we do very well at our gym club, which is why I don't have these problems, is a very clear actually separation between the coaches and the parents in a very healthy way. I think that when, you know, like, let's say you're a 20, even a 30 year, like, even like I look at myself at age 30 and how I was interpreting questions and criticism, because you're already, if you are trying to do a good job, you're already critical of yourself, just like the athlete.
Yep.
Right. And so you're already like blaming yourself every time Susie falls, you know, they go to the meet and they don't hit. What did I do wrong? How can I do better? You're already going through that. And then when the parent, geez, it just would have been, and it's like innocuous. It would have been so nice if she won bars today. Yeah, I know. That would have been great. You're right. Geez, if she just hadn't fallen, she would have been first in the all around. Do you know that she fell twice last meet and the meet before? What's going on? And like, those are very PG versions of what a lot of coaches are getting.
Right.
But, and they're fine questions, but they come with a tone. And they come with a look, and then you multiply that on 20 to 30 parents asking you the same thing. I mean, if I'm thinking how many times I walked out of a meet and all they actually said to me was, hey, great job, coach. That's not very often. And it's only the dads. I get that from the dads. Hey, coach, thanks. Great job. And then you have 30 other people that want to ask you questions. And you're right. Why can't you involve the parent? Why can't they ask those questions? Because those questions come with a lot of pressure. And when you're getting 30 at one time, like let's say, you know, you've got five sessions and you have these 10 level fives and you have these, then by the time you've hit the end of that competition day or the end of your training day, you could be questioned on every little thing that you've done that day up to 80 to 100 times. And that's really unhealthy for the coach. So in our gym, we have it set up where there really is, we don't talk to the parents. We do group talks. So we do a big group meeting at the beginning of every year by level. And we kind of set the stage. This is what the level eights are doing. And in this, some of the kids are going to do this. And some of the kids are going to go all the way up to level nine skills, just based on their personal journey and what they're ready for. But, you know, we have those levels. We do three different kind of, for better, you know, report cards Mm-hmm. But they're not emotional report cards. Yeah. It is, he can do this, these skills, these conditioning, that's it. And then when we have to have any harder conversations other than, you know, just waving at them from the floor, like, hey, how are you today? Anything past that has to go to the team manager. And the team manager will set up a conversation with two coaches present at all times. And I do think that actually helps us, mm-hmm. because then it doesn't turn into a contest of who can talk to me the most or who can talk to, you know, my level 7 coach the most, because then it turns into a contest. And even though the parents may not start off that way, it certainly does. Like, immediately, well, I talked to Coach Becca today and she said this. Oh, well, I need to talk to Coach Becca. Like, what don't I know? And then it turns into like a little contest, and we at our gym feel a high responsibility to protect the coaches as well. So that's how we do that. So if a parent truly has something, they have to send an email. It has to have an agenda. We do not entertain any meetings without an agenda. If on the agenda, it compares children, we don't entertain that. If you would like to talk about your specific athlete and her journey, that is fine. And you get one. You get one, so you better not mess it up. Mm-hmm. Unless it's a true issue. You know, obviously, if there were any, you know, anything like the coach said something mean to my kid today, that stuff is always entertained. You know what I mean? Like those very serious things, but that's also very clearly lined out to the parents. What's appropriate to be asking throughout the season, what's not appropriate to be asking throughout the season. If she gets one bad score once, if she usually wins all the time and has a bad meet, we are not meeting about that. Everyone is allotted one bad meet. There doesn't need to be a discussion about it.
Yeah.
She fell down. That's fine. You know, if all of a sudden you see a pattern, a little pattern, and at the end of the season, we got to sit down and talk about it. We do.
Yeah.
So I think it's just finding that happy medium of understanding that there's a respectful and a proper way to do that. And unfortunately, usually the casual way, which is how everyone wants to do it. They don't want to have a formal meeting. But because we've pushed it to that, it really makes the parents sit down and evaluate, does this question need to be asked? Mm-hmm. In person.
Yeah.
and I do think that's a huge part of it. And so we don't experience that same level of stress and pressure from the parents because of that. But I can look back at a time at our gym where we didn't have those rules in place as well. And I do think it brought out that's when you would see it bring out the worst in people, you know? So I think that's hard. I don't know if we're doing it correctly or not. You know what I mean? And I think that's tricky too. Like, I don't know that we're doing it the best way possible, but I also know that when my coaches are stressed and when I was stressed as a coach, I did not do my best work. Just like the athlete, right?
Yeah.
We're the same. We're just older. Like, so, you know, I do think that that's a huge part of it. Obviously, once they hit level 10, actually, they do have direct access to me. If you're level 10 and you want to talk to me about your kid, then you can do that. You've earned the right. If you're a level 4, no. You know, I had a group of level 5s. They had some questions. We sat down, we had our meeting, and then we put out just a reminder, this was your meeting for the year, you know? And we mean it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a huge part of it too. Like, yeah. We mean it. But I think the report card part of it is a huge part of why we're successful, because on that report card has their level, the requirements as they are written in the code, then an explanation in like real people speak.
Yeah.
And then, examples, this routine will win at the level. This routine meets requirements and will be third. This routine is perfectly safe and respectable, but will probably be 10th, which is really important when you get into like level 8, 9, and 10, and you're talking about all the composition and all that stuff. So I think that that's a huge component of it too. It's providing that, because that's what they want to know, right?
Yeah, right.
That's what they want to know. So we just provide it written. and it's done. I tweak it every year, but it's not that hard. And then we have the progressions listed. Here are the progressions. Here's the skill. Here are the progressions. Here's the skill. And those are the main ones that they need in their level. And then on the back page, it's all of the upgrades. And they're very clearly written. Upgrades. These will be done when all work is completed or all of the skills on the front have been done to a level of excellence.
Yeah.
So then there's no questions. And those have been very, very helpful. The mistake we made originally, though, is we had coaches' comments on there. That did not go well. Because just like the little like, oh, it would have been nice if she, you know, stayed on the beam today, you know, little, you know, she could work harder. Boom. That like just ignites a fire.
Yeah.
We took off the coach's comments section, left it very, this is what we can do. And we do it three times. We do it right at the end of season. As soon as they finish their last state meet, this is where they're at. We do it in the middle. And then we do it right before we declare level.
I love it all. Yeah. And I could agree. I say that we had similar cultural issues with parents unhappy, and having our like kind of traffic system, move up system, whatever you want to call it, was enormously helpful. And I know Kale and Brett and Sarah have talked about how they use the same system. And it seems that that's a common thread behind a lot of coaches is objective progress reports or objective information. Because in my experience, parents get cranky when they're blindsided by, you know, information at the end of the season, whatever. So I enjoy the perspective. I think those are valuable pieces of advice in setting the, I guess, the thread of the podcast. Is I really enjoy that we kind of had the Diana and Chelsea on who talked about their parents' perspective. And then I was serving as the coach about like, yeah, but you don't understand how hard it is sometimes to deal with, like we're talking about like multiple parents and multiple complaints. And, you know, there are parents who are out of line, who are just out of line. They're coaching from the stands where they're questioning everything you do. And I think parents underestimate how much pressure and stress that puts on coaches when you have so many people doing it. And there's, I think what we tried to illustrate in that post, and I'm glad you talked about the scope, which I want to get into. And also what I think Jen Pinches was trying to illuminate in that post is there's a difference between an informed parent and like an overbearing helicopter parent. Like the perspective of the parent that some people have told me is like, I'm new to this sport. I never did sports growing up. I have no idea what is happening with this ridiculous sport. And I'm just trying to understand why my daughter's upset 20 hours a day when she comes home. You know what I mean? Like throughout the practices. So I think we have to make sure that as coaches, and I think you guys are doing this very well, is you are entertaining questions that are rational and have real purpose. And it's just about education versus allowing, you know, the wild west to occur when you have parents that are one or two parents who are really out of line or are pushing their kids too much or comparing kids, like you said, to kind of really spoil the environment. And so I think there's a distinction there between the overbearing, aggressive, out of line parent and the well-intentioned, uninformed. And I think as coaches, we have to respect their wishes. And as parents, they have to respect the insane standards that they expect of coaches and how much coaches really do and still like, just don't get rewarded or hey, good job today or something like that. They just like literally are relentless with their standards. I think that's a huge problem that we have to have a better conversation about.
Yeah. I think when it comes to the scope, I have started to get worried in our sport a little bit with scope. As I'm sitting, you know, back and kind of watching things unfold on social media, cause that's where things are unfolding now, you know? And I do want to make sure that we stay in our lane. You know, we stay in our lane a little bit and understand what our job is and what our job isn't. And making sure that we have all of the same expectations for Little League and soccer and softball that we have for gymnastics.
Yeah.
You know, For better or for worse, that's where we're at. The cat's already out of the bag. We can't go back into what they do in Europe and have coaches go to college. You know, this is what's happening. So how do we make it better without creating a situation where the expectation on the coach is that we be a master, a true master of all things? Because that's going to take away from the actual coaching. Like, what are you supposed to be doing? I'm supposed to be teaching children gymnastics. Yep. Like, that is my job. But I can be good and educated and all of the other things, you know. But I'm also fortunate in the way that my life is set up, that I have a very supportive husband and I don't have any kids. So my ability to kind of do all of this extra is very different than say a coach that would have a family, and they should be allowed to do that too.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that their day looks like my day.
Right. Yeah.
So when I talk about the scope, things that I'm getting worried about, there was a post about all of the different things that we should be checking on when they come into the gym. And I was like, oh geez, I totally get where that's coming from. Like, I feel you and I understand, but wow, that's a lot of responsibility on the coach. And now we're diving into like the kid's personal life, and all we're being told from USAG and from the Center of Safe Sport is to get out of their personal lives and making sure we're really rectifying those things, because I do think that's where we could take this beehive and just really shake it up and make things worse.
Yeah.
You know, is it my business, their eating habits? Yes and no. You could argue both sides. Is it my business when they're going to bed? Yes and no. Like, at what point does the parental boundary stop and my coach responsibilities begin? And you know, some of those things are being thrown around, like, and I'm like, oh geez, we want to be very careful about stepping in somebody's home.
Right.
And stepping into the lifestyle choices that they're deciding are appropriate for their kids.
Yeah.
And how much of that is my business?
Yeah.
Truly. And how much of it isn't.
And just so people know, that's what you mean by scope, right? Which is like, what is being asked of a coach in terms of like a mental health provider, a nutritionist, a gymnastics coach, you know, all that kind of stuff. So just so people understand.
Right. So so that's what we're seeing, right? Like, you know, the kids need to be well rested and you need to be asking, how do you feel today? Did you, you know, there was like a checklist that came out, like, do you feel well rested? And they color a smiley face. Did you get 8 hours of sleep last night? And they color a smiley face. You know, do you feel like you have energy? And they color a smiley face. That's like,
Yeah.
I'm stepping into their house. Like, that checklist seems innocent and it seems like it would be very helpful. But what happens when you have a kid that's like all of a sudden, all of them are unhappy. Is it that I'm going to go to the parent? You know, she says she's not getting 8 hours of sleep a night. I mean, as a parent, depending on the parent, you might get back 5 different responses. One of them being, that's absolutely none of your business.
Right.
When she walks in the gym, that's your business. When she leaves the gym, that's your business. And I'm sure most parents would be somewhere in the middle.
Sure.
I think they'd be most somewhere in the middle, but I just don't know. And I'm not a parent, so it's hard for me to put myself into their shoes, but I try, you know? And so like, I give out, like I provide things, and that's kind of how I've decided that's where my role is.
Yep.
I provide content on my social media platforms for my parents. I provide access to people that I believe to be working in the right way. Carrie Bear is one of them.
Yep. Podcast tomorrow with her.
Yep. And so I paid with the parent org for consultations with her as a group. Like, I'll do those things and I will provide the information.
Right.
But that's all I can do. And then past that, I don't think it's my job to be checking in.
Yep.
Unless that parent for some reason decides to involve me.
Right.
If they want to ask my opinion, then it's appropriate for me to give it.
Mm-hmm.
So, right. And without, like, I don't know everything about nutrition. So all I should be doing is finding the people that seem to have proven excellence in this area and saying, hey, if you have a question, go ask them.
Yeah. Right.
But I shouldn't be providing nutritional information. I can just provide the avenues of which to maybe find that information. Exactly. I shouldn't be providing sleep guidelines. I can just repost somebody else. And they could choose to take that information or not. Same thing with mental health. Like, so it does worry me a little bit that we're going to all of a sudden be holding coaches accountable to the kids' nutrition, the kids' sleep, the kids' mental health, the kids' training, their periodization. Are you weightlifting? Are you not weightlifting? Are you weightlifting appropriately? How much do you know about Olympic style weightlifting? Oh my God, you know, boom, all of a sudden you're at like a PhD level of gymnastics at level 4.
Yeah.
That doesn't add up to me. That doesn't add up to me. And making sure that we're really careful about the way we speak about that. You know, obviously my level 10 parents and I are far more involved with those kinds of things than I am with my level 4s and 5s, and in making sure we really separate that out of appropriateness. And, you know, I don't know that we want to be encouraging young coaches to be involved. I mean, I think of some of the people that I know that have gotten themselves into hot water with Safe Sport. And it starts off with being just too involved. And then that looks really bad. Mm. So, you know, and it can snowball very quickly. So I just think there's a fine line to walk in there. You know, and staying in our lane and sitting down critically and thinking what truly is my business and what is not my business.
Absolutely.
And not that we can't be educated on those things. Like I try to be very educated. I had a lot of conversations with Carrie so that I can be educated.
Because
I think, you know, I think I should be. I'm the head coach and I'm the gym owner. I'd be held to a higher standard, but that's my personal belief. That's not everyone's personal belief system.
Yeah.
But I don't know that we want to be encouraging young coaches to be getting involved in proper nutrition.
Right.
Or encouraging young coaches. I mean, mental health and therapy, that's really hard. Like there's a reason why you need a PhD level to be diving into that.
Yep.
You know, that's maybe not our place.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's a difference. I always want to put a pause when I see those things like, ooh, pause. Let's talk that out. What's our business? What's not our business?
Yep. I couldn't agree more. And I think there's two important pieces that I kind of take away from that. And I've always viewed it as one is that the role of information gathering, like especially like if you're doing like wellness survey before they come in, is in relation to how are they going to perform in gymnastics. Like I'm gathering this information about like, did you sleep well? Are you sore? Are you tired? Because I want to know how is that going to influence our training for the day. And I think that's where the role of a coach to gather that information is valuable. It's not to say like, go to the parent and be like, well, she's not doing this, or it seems like this. And especially with food and fuel and mental health and personal training and strength and all that kind of stuff. It's like, for you as a coach, you have to say like, these are the things I need to have small amounts of information about and be educated on in relationship to reaching your goals of your performance that you want. And then the other piece of that too, is like when you maybe do, they have a really rough day, they're crying a lot. There's a million different scenarios we could talk about, you know, they're super tired, they're low energy. You just need to gather facts and present facts to the parent. Say, hey, this is exactly what I observed. This is what she or he told me. And I'm just letting you know, because it's in relationship to the quality of work or what we can do in the gym. And I think that's a good delineation for a lot of coaches between when they start overstepping, is they either make suggestions or they assume things, or they interpret things the wrong way, or they make suggestions about things they're not versed in. So that would be my first piece of advice. And I think the other thing you beautifully put together is that you are aware of these professions and these experts like Carrie and other people for strength and conditioning or mental health. And you will suggest that they go to these providers and have them do it, but you ultimately can't make anybody do anything. And I think we hear that a lot from coaches who DM you, email me. It's like, these athletes have these injuries. I know they need a screen. You know, I can't have a physical therapist come to me. I'm telling them, go see a medical provider, go see a doctor, go talk with a mental health provider, talk with a nutritionist. And the parents just don't value it and won't do it. As a coach, you feel for the kid because you know that they would perform so much better if they had access to those resources, but you can't make the parents do anything. You can't make anything happen. So all you can do is provide education, be like, well, I listened to this podcast. This person is really smart. I think you should maybe check it out. And that's actually, it's funny the way it all threaded together is after talking with you and having this post about like where, especially with food and sleep and hydration and stress management, about where that line blurs between what a coach should suggest and then like, you know, how involved they are. I think that's the role of, you know, talking to other people and saying like, what is the role of a coach in nutrition versus what is the role of a parent in nutrition versus what's the role of a gymnast in nutrition? Ask Carrie that tomorrow. I'll be like, okay, where do these lines draw? and how do we make sure we're staying in our lane, we have our scope provided? Because I think that is massively valuable to not get over-involved.
Right. It really is. And like, I definitely get the idea of that survey. I really do. Yeah. To me, I guess, if you have a good relationship with your athlete, though, you can just tell and you can just say, hey, do you need to modify today?
Yep.
And the kid's going to say yes or no. Yep, I need to modify today. Hey, no problem. Let me know what you can do.
Yep.
But that also takes a lot of experience to be able to not have that ego to like, you have to do this. Well, they need to modify that day. That's what they got to do.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know that I need a survey to tell me when my kid clearly doesn't look great. You know, in the warm-up.
Yeah, exactly. And also it takes you as a coach, as you talked about in the beginning, is spending most of your time listening and not demanding, you know what I mean? It's like, it's a much different coaching perspective and style to be willing to have open ears and value their input and hear what they have to say and watch them and pay attention and not be on your freaking phone while everyone's doing strength. You know what I mean? Like that's a real thing that's still happening. It's like, go do your strength. I'm going to go take care of some paperwork or do these side drills and like, let me know when you're done. Like that's a real problem that's still going on.
That's like the most important part of the day.
Yeah.
It's like the actual most important part of the day. if the conditioning is done correctly and the line drills are done with perfection, then the skills will just happen. It's hard because, you know, I look at my friend group and in my circle, everyone's valuing that. So it's weird for me to, you know, I can't find five examples of people that don't value that, you know? So like you said, like our experiences shape our perspective. You know, my professional friend group, of course, knows that that's the most important part of the day and that you should absolutely be supervising. But I mean, yeah, I think to kind of go back to where we were before with the scope, I just do think it's important. I want to watch how things are framed, how people take those things. And, you know, I'm definitely looking at it, trying to take more pressure off of the coaches than apply more pressure on.
Yep.
You know, when you hear in the community how the coaches are feeling, you know, I would say that right now coaches in the community are feeling pressured, overworked, and scared. And then you look at the job postings right now and they are out of control. People can't find coaches and you have to take a step back and say, geez, well, we can't really have the sport without the coach. Mm-hmm. And a lot of phenomenal high level places that probably never had a hard time filling positions before are definitely having trouble filling positions now. So I think you take that into account and I'm going, geez, I think we have a bigger problem. Like all of these are going to be irrelevant if there's no one to coach the children.
Got to have someone to do gymnastics and someone to coach gymnastics.
Right. So, I mean, I don't know if you've been on the job, gymnastics jobs posting site, or you just watch the different clubs posting. And like I would say in the last 2 weeks, there have probably been five very high level gyms posting. Whereas before they probably never had to post a job listing ever. They probably, you know what I mean? It was just like, hey, I'll call this person. They can come on over. And that's not happening. You know, people are scared. So I do want to respect, I'm always trying to respect that and look at everything that's happening. And, you know, I mean, I know I have a very, very good friend who's a very good coach, very good coach. And she's, as soon as she graduates her 2022, she's walking out. She's done, you know? And she doesn't have any problems. Like not, you know what I mean? Like she's had a pretty nice, she's like, I can't do it. I can't deal with the stress. I can't deal with the pressure. She's like, every parent wants a college scholarship. You know, I'm a terrible coach if I can't do it. She's internalized all of these things. And, you know, and I'm trying my best to be like, listen, when good people walk out of our sport and like you, she is good. She has only positive track record history. She does get her kids what they want. If they want D1 scholarship, she does that. If that's not where they're headed, she totally respects that. Mm. And she's done.
Yeah.
And I think that's happening a lot more than we need to pay attention to that. Because what happens when all the good coaches walk out?
I agree. And I think that's something behind the scenes, lucky to do work with like some high level conversations with NGBs about what they think is going on in terms of like real practical changes. And I do think that large majority of people who are great coaches doing the right thing, they mean well, they just want to learn more. I think empathy is lost on them. And I think that they are being lumped into the category of the monsters that deserve to go. So, you know, there's one or two here and there that when you change the standards, you write new policies, the pressure comes on and they get insecure because maybe they aren't doing the best thing and they leave the sport and you're like, bye-bye. You know, but for the majority of people, you're like, you see the whiplash effect of what happens when we go on that aggressive, you know, pinning the coaches for all the problems. And, you know, I've tried my best in those conversations to be like, you guys, the solution out of this is what we're doing here, which is conversation about things you disagree on, or you have different perspectives on, empathetic points of view to the enormous demand that coaches have or parents have or medical providers, whatever. But three is, have you ever actually sat down with your coaches who are struggling and that are good people and saying, what do you need help with? You know, what frustrates you? And they're going to go, parents, the pressure, my lack of education and dealing with teenagers who are emotional, like the motivation levels are low or they don't want to do it. And so we have to have the ability and willingness to sit down with those people and say, okay, I hear what you're saying. Here are some ways we can help you so that you feel better at work. You're more excited. You don't feel burnt out and tired. And then I think the biggest thing that still I've told a lot of people is like the reality of what's happening in the gym and then the perception of what the problems are in the gym are so far apart. Like the coaches in the trenches are telling us like it's those four things I talked about, but in the higher level, they're like, oh, it's just ridiculous things. I mean, they make PR statements and, you know, marketing statements about what they think is going wrong. And like, well, it's this problem or this policy. It's like, no, it's this parent who's like running down my face every time I talk to her, or it's having 25 kids who all have different goals. And I've not gotten help on how do you teach these skills properly? How do you deal with kids that are low motivation? And so I think, I guess this long spiel is that if we really, in my opinion, and I would love to hear your thoughts, if we want to actually make real meaningful change, it is more of these conversations about what are the real problems and how do we deal with them? And how can we help you in the trenches get tools you need to be successful and be happy with your job? And I think that that's lost on people right now. I think that they're not empathetic to what coaches really go through, the great coaches who are doing the right thing. And I also think they're not empathetic towards what happens when you allow a few high-level coaches who are morally misguided to run the ship, and how that all takes down on the people they work with. So my opinions, but
yeah, no, I totally think that. And I think that a lot of us are suffering from that fallout.
Yeah. Right.
And you know, people that do care about their job are going to feel those things. And I think you hit that. And I think that is why I speak up, because what I'm noticing is that it's like, you know, it's like not even the right thing now to talk about the coach, as if our feelings now all of a sudden don't matter when there are so many good ones out there. Yeah. There's so many. So I guess I always feel the need to make sure that the whole conversation is discussed, like you said, not just one side. And then it's not a very fun thing to do, but to pro and con or devil's advocate, all of those situations, okay, here's what we're going to mandate. What are the potential fallouts, negative and positive, from this? How far can you take that? That's something that actually my team manager and I do every single Tuesday with every single decision we make. And it takes a long time. It's something that she and I have been doing together, geez Louise, for like 17 years now, you know, just... But it takes a lot of patience to be able to pro and con things and not take it personally.
Right.
Okay, we're going to make this decision. What's going to be the fallout? What's the pro and con? You know, so like I look at some of these things coming out as recommendations for us to do, and I go, geez, ooh, we got to pro and con this. But we can't just pro and con it here. You've got to pro and con that 4 years.
Yeah.
4 years, what does this look like? 5 years, the same way you plan for your athlete. Mm-hmm. You're supposed to be planning 5 years back all the time. So then you've got to say, okay, any mandate or recommendation that we make, not what's the immediate pro and con, what is the pro and con and how is this going to cascade over a 5-year span?
Yep.
So I think that's always why I'm like, ooh, let's talk about that more.
Yeah. I've embraced that concept a lot. I teach about like having a lens of twos, like what is this decision affect 2 hours, 2 days, 2 weeks, 2 months, 2 years, 2 decades on yourself, the athlete, the gym and stuff like that. And I think it's, an important fork of decisions to kind of work through down the road. I guess the last, we've already kind of dived into this already, but the last thing I think a lot of people are struggling with right now is to be able to navigate in the sport, low level, high level, whatever else it is, but just navigate in the sport and have a positive culture where the kids are happy, the coaches are happy, the parents are happy, and still chase super high level goals. And I think a lot of parents that I maybe DM me or are concerned, or even coaches too, are like, I'm trying to do the right thing. My coworkers won't change. They're super stubborn. Mm-hmm. Feels like I can't move to a gym right now because of coronavirus or like, you know, the pandemic situation, but I hate my job or I don't like the gym I'm at. The culture seems bad. Like, so I guess in your experiences, it sounds like you've gone through a lot of transformation. Is if you had practical pieces of advice to either coaches or parents listening who are trying to build a better environment in their gym, and you've mentioned some like communication and some other stuff like mm-hmm. that, but are there any other pieces of wisdom that you would have for people as they try to kind of remaster their culture and have everyone in their gym, not just the kids, but coaches as well, be a little bit happier with their daily work?
So I think what I'm going to say is not easy. and I don't know, like I know at our gym, we have, like I talked about, those underlying philosophies, and we've got a few of them, right? Yeah. So we play off of John Wooden a little bit. We don't lie. We don't cheat. We don't steal. We don't make excuses, mm-hmm. right? We believe in friendship, love, and loyalty. We can disagree without being disagreeable. And then the final one that I think is the hardest one that we talk about is look to yourself. And so I think that one, as a gym, you need to have those pillars. If you, just like any business, we should, every gym and every team should have pillars of which they believe to create the culture. And I think that what I hear a lot, like what you're saying, is the aspect that's missing is the look to yourself, because that's what we're teaching the children, right? You can only affect yourself. You can only worry about your work. You could, you know, we have to apply what we teach to ourselves directly. And I think that is the hardest thing. I'm not taking away the reality. Yes, you might be working in a very toxic environment and you can't make a change right now, professionally, but you absolutely can affect the way that you interact with your students. Mm-hmm. You know, you have that ability. And if you know that you're doing the right thing, then someone's criticism shouldn't affect you. There's a really great, I use a lot of different mental coaches. This year I've been working a lot with Stacey Herman. Mm-hmm. And she has this great concept with your A circle, B circle, and C circle that I think is great for all people, not just athletes. And it's this pretty much that ability to say, this is what I'm doing. These are my decisions in my A circle, and you're not a part of that. So then their negative reaction to what you're doing wouldn't affect you anyway, because they're not part of your A circle. Mm. That's what I would say to those coaches. I would say that you have to practice every single day the concept of looking to yourself and creating a true level of respect. And I think that really is hard. I mean, even with new coaches I get in, I think the first thing they always say, and I am very, very proud of this, I said it earlier, I'll say it again, is everyone talks about how respectful the kids are. Mm. You know, they're just so pleasant. You know, it's just pleasant. And it is, it's just pleasant. Every day is pleasant. But like, why would you want to have a place that's dredged in conflict?
Yeah.
But it's pleasant because of the coaches.
Yeah.
But not all of us. And when our kind of transformation as a gym started, it didn't start with all of us. It started with just one or two of us. Mm. And guess what? When you have happy kids, they get results.
Yep.
They do. So then the proof is in the pudding.
Yep.
And if you're doing the right thing, you'll come out on top. It's just that simple. So that's what I would say, is you have to look to yourself, come in every single day, start to create your lesson within your current constraints, whatever they are, but you're not constrained with how you communicate. I've never been into a gym that says you have to yell at the children. You've seen it tolerated. You've seen maybe it even encouraged, but I've never ever once heard a coach tell me you have to yell at them, even ones that I know that do.
Yeah.
You know, like, so then you, okay, well, how do you make them do it if you're not yelling at them. That's part of you to figure that out. How are you going to do that? You know, for us, it was written lesson plans for a little bit of time to start that transformation, because then you'd be surprised the way that children respond to reading. If it's written, the way that they respond, it's amazing. And that was kind of part of what started the change, because it took away the fight between the coach and the athlete. And it was, this was the assignment per athlete, and it just got placed on the floor, and the kids would read it and they would do it. And it almost turned into like a little scavenger hunt. Like, they had a fun time. Like, ooh, what do I do next? What's next? You know? And I think making sure you remember that the purpose of sport has so many different things, but one, they're supposed to love it. You're supposed to do things you love. So how do you make sure that you're like, it's just so easy to come back when you like really step back. You know, you're supposed to love gymnastics. You're supposed to, people want to do what they want to do. How do you create that? How do you help them love it? So I would say when that's the hardest thing is look to yourself, because then you have to say, how can I be different every day in my current circumstance? How can I make sure that the rest of these circumstances are not really affecting me? And you can change a lot. Because as soon as your kids are doing well and they're happy, other people will want that too.
Sure.
And then they will ask you.
Sure.
Geez, how are you doing that? I mean, there was rope climbs, right? That comes up all the time.
Yeah.
And that was something that I really set out to make sure was not a horrible thing. Like, how do I make kids excited to climb the rope?
Yeah.
And that's something I teach all now my development staff. You know, kids should not be crying on the rope. They shouldn't be crying to go over to the rope. You know, and they were like, how did you do that? In my gym, what worked was giving them free rein to climb a rope whenever they felt like it. So we'd go to bars. Girls, anytime you would like to go over and climb a rope, you can go climb a rope anytime you feel like it. And maybe Susie did 5 and Sally did 0. And that's okay. You know what I mean? And like, that's okay.
Yeah.
You know, and then the next day, oh my gosh, Susie did 5. Who can tie her number? And they're like, oh, you know, oh my gosh, can we have a day where everybody, the whole group does 2? Let's get excited. You know, and it's just so easy.
Yeah.
It's just so easy. And then all of a sudden you have a whole group of little kids that love doing all of those hard things because it's fun and it's their choice and they're doing it because they want to. And you just kind of start your program off like that. I don't make my kids do anything.
Yeah.
0. None of, I don't make them ever do anything, even when they're little. So you have to look to yourself and you have to be smarter than the children.
Yeah.
The kids are crying every day. That's on you.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's phenomenal advice. And I think the look to yourself is very good because it ties together these themes we've talked about, which is look to yourself for your personal mission statement, your personal goals, because that will give you the spine and the leg to stand on to go against the grain and do what you believe in. But also look to yourself within your group and within your gym about everything we talked about, which is if you have clear lines in the sand about these are the policies, these are the move up things, here are the parents, you know, when we can talk, when we don't want to talk, how do we get a meeting? If you outline these things clearly and explain why, you can point to those things when you're critiquing people's behaviors and it becomes about critiquing their choices and their decisions and saying those consequences are a result of those and not attacking the person or blaming the person. That's how you are able to have, like you said, you can disagree without being disrespectful, right? Or something of that nature. I'm sorry if I butchered that, but
disagree without being disagreeable.
Yeah, exactly right. So looking to yourself personally, looking to yourself as a gym, I think are so important. And I think that really helps people set the stage for a constant fluid discussion about what they need to do to be successful. And for me, what that all comes down to is intent. If your intent is good, you're morally as a human good, you're morally and ethically as a gym, you're doing the right thing. If your intentions are good and you're leading the best way you can, it's okay to make mistakes. It's okay to screw things up. You can admit you're wrong and learn new things. And I think that's where people really need to be on in terms of like having the stomach to take criticism from old school coaches who maybe don't want to change or the media or things of that. And it's like, I believe my morals are sound. I'm doing the best I possibly can. My intention is good. And if I make a mistake, I'll admit it and I will learn from it and I'll move on. I think that's what we all should be striving for which leads to these kind of conversations, which is let's talk about how do we get there the best way about, you know, I don't need to be right, but what is right is really the goal.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It really is. And I mean, at the end of the day, if you're doing all of those things, you can put your head on your pillow at night and sleep soundly. Definitely. And like you said, you don't have to be perfect.
Right.
You don't have to be a master of all of those things. You just have to have the right intent. Mm-hmm. And you have to be willing, you know, I tell my coaches this too. If you want to be treated as a professional, then you have to act as a professional. And professionals in all areas of the world are constantly trying to educate themselves. So if that's what you want to be looked at as, then walk the walk. Yep. And if you want the respect of the athlete, you have to demonstrate that first by respecting them first. You know, honestly, it's everything we learned in kindergarten.
Yeah, exactly.
It really is. Like, if you passed kindergarten, you can do this.
Exactly.
Because it is. It's so much more simple than I think we're making it. You know, we can boil this down to some really easy things. Yep. You know, you don't have to be the most educated. You just have to be willing. You know, you don't have to know everything. You just have to be respectful. Think about what that word means. Do it. You know?
Yeah. Make sure your choices reflect those morals, right? Which I think also is lost on many people is they read the books, they go to the lectures, they listen to podcasts, they think this, I'm going to be great, I'm going to be awesome. But then rubber meets the road. They aren't, like we said, simple, but difficult. It's simple, but hard. And to do those 1,000 choices per week that lead to positive outcomes and reflect your morals, it's challenging. And I think that's what we should be trying to encourage is giving people the safety net to make those hard decisions and have those hard choices, because it reflects you're a good person if you actually do what you say and what you mean.
Right. But you just have to, you know, to me, it always goes back to like, am I living the life that I'm teaching my children? So you don't have to be, you don't have to do all 1,000 in 1 week. You just have to do one.
Yep.
You do one. And then when you've got one down, then you do this. It's the same way we build a handstand, you know? Yeah. So like if you just step back, because learning is learning and change is all the same. Mm. And once you put that into practice, you'll be a better coach actually, and a better technician, because it will just make sense to you the way to build things. Mm. It just makes sense. So you don't have to do all those 1,000 things. You have to do one, and maybe your one first is you're like, yeah, geez, you know, my kids really hate this event. They come over and they hate bars all the time. So your first goal is I'm going to eliminate that. So every time we go to bars, I'm going to set the stage and I'm going to be excited about bars. Whether they follow along or not, doesn't matter. I'm going to come over. Yes, it's our favorite event. Let's go. Yep. So it just starts with one decision, and then it can then continue on. And I think it's just the same way you build a skill. So I think if people were to look at that, like, okay, this, you can do it. You can make a change. It's actually easier than you think. You don't have to be perfect at it. And even if the kids resist a little bit, they're eventually going to fall in line. They really will. I think I hear that too. Like, oh, you know, I try those tricks, but my kids think it's stupid. Mm. So what? Do it again the next day, and do it again the next day, and do it again the next day until they're on board. And you can even say, I know you all think that this is ridiculous, but we're going to do it anyway. Like, you have to be smarter than the kids.
Yeah.
And like, who cares if they think it's stupid? Like,
yeah. It's like anything else, right? The first time you do anything is like, no one wants to do it. Change is awkward. So you just got to keep chipping
right.
away.
Right. Like, I mean, I say, I'm like, why is the 12-year-old deciding your self-worth today?
That's so well said.
Like, why do you care?
Why is this random Joe Schmo on Twitter or Instagram right. or Facebook deciding my self-worth at the coach? Right. Who gives a crap? Right.
Who gives a crap? Like, you just, like, sometimes you just got to step back and be like, okay, what's really going on here? All right, you know what? The goal is to have more fun on bars. If that makes me look silly or weird or stupid in their eyes, it doesn't matter, because the goal is clear. Mm-hmm. And then you can make the right decisions. And what everybody else thinks about it doesn't matter. Like you said, as long as you have the right intent.
Yep. Yep.
And guess what? Kids like silly, and they like weird, and they kind of like when you're stupid. Like,
They
do. Like when you're when you're just having fun, they like that, and they'll pretend they don't, and they'll be like, and then you just keep going, and eventually, all of a sudden, they're all on board because children like learning, and they like having fun, and they like when their coach is a person. It's just not that hard.
I agree. Well, this was a fantastic conversation. I really thank you for chatting and expanding on some of these concepts. And I think a lot of people will resonate with many of the things we talked about. So thank you so much.
Of course. I really enjoyed it. I'd like to do it again sometime. It's fun to talk this stuff out.
Yeah. Door's always open because God knows there's more complex topics than the ones we talked about.
Definitely. There's a lot, man. There's a lot, but I think these are really important too. So thank you for your time and thanks for your invitation. I really appreciated it.
No problem. I welcome it and I welcome the chat. So I can't wait to put this one out in a couple weeks. It'll come right after Sarah, so it'll be perfect.
Okay, cool. Great.
Have a great day. All right.
Yeah. Bye.
Hey everyone, thanks for listening to that episode. I hope that you really enjoyed it and got a lot of value out of it. I just want to let you know before we sign off here that a couple things we'd love you to do. So one is please just make sure that you rate and review the podcast on iTunes or Spotify or Stitcher, wherever you're listening, because that really does help the episode grow quite a bit. And then second, if you really enjoyed this episode, we would love if you left us a review as well and told us what you liked about it. You know, what information was useful, what things were not useful, would you like to know more about, what guests you want to have on in the future. And then also as you kind of go about your day, if you found something really useful, just toss it up on social media. We love to hear from people on Instagram or Twitter or, all the different websites that they're using for social media. Facebook is great too. But yeah, let us know what you like, because honestly, the podcast comes from people who just tell us what they're finding useful. And that's how we create the next set of content. So yeah, tag us in the podcast or tag us online, whatever you're doing, and let us know what you think. Thanks.